and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello. Why do you always get to do the intro?
Well, it's the Trev and Ben podcast, so I sort of think that my voice should be heard first. I sound of my own voice more.
I'm just thinking, what's this, episode 70?
Yeah. Well, do you want to do it?
You never once even offered.
Do it then. Yeah, it's yours. Go for it.
What, are we deleting the first bit we've just done, or?
It depends on how well you do it.
Okay, well, this is the official beginning of the podcast now. Okay,
yeah.
Go. Hello, and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast. How are you?
It's not the same, is it?
I don't talk all over you when you're doing the intro.
I mean, the point is, we have a format that works. Our two listeners love it. There's never been any complaints about it. And it doesn't sit right with me, you doing it.
I'm sorry
about that. And, you know, I don't normally put my foot down and pull rank, but...
All right, fine. We'll do it the usual way.
Just try it one more time. Maybe to give it less... It sounded a bit false. It sounded like you were pushing it a bit. It didn't sound very natural.
Oh, okay. I'm getting critiqued as well. Nice. Okay, give me a second.
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast.
Now you just sound bored. I mean, it just sounded terribly bored now.
So I need to split the difference between... overzealous and bored.
Yeah, okay. If you can just find that sweet spot.
Hello, and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast.
Yeah, it's
even usable. I didn't like that one. That was far too voiceovery. I didn't like that at all. Let's just leave it up to you, shall we?
Should I just do it from now on?
Yeah.
This reminds me of years ago, when making radio adverts was my job. So I used to have to produce people, right? And people think that's an easy job, to just sit there and tell people how to say things.
No, hang on a minute. I've been on the receiving end of this.
Yeah.
Some of the instructions that these arseholes give you, louder but quieter, more aggressive but softer.
We never really say stuff like
you
that.
You do!
We don't say stuff like that, right? But I had this one client who... wanted to be in on the recording session for his advert once, right? So I booked the two voiceovers and, oh, this guy was an absolute dickhead. He did some sort of, like, his company was some sort of, like, oh, I don't know, like, it was one of those wanky things, like, what do you call them? Like, life management person, you know?
Coaching.
Life coaching. I mean, what is that? What a wanky piece of shit that is. So he comes in, this arrogant cock of a man, and he's like, I mean I do public speaking, I'm all about telling people how to project themselves and present themselves. So he's telling these two voiceovers, who between them have got probably 60 years experience at least, and you could hear them sitting there thinking, oh, just fuck off. Just fuck off. Because he's going, so he's telling them all that wank that you've just gone through that most of our professional producers don't generally say. And it was just awful. And I ended up having to say to the voiceovers afterwards, I'm so sorry about that. And they were very good about it. Anyway, fast forward a year, the guy comes back. He wants to do some new adverts. But this time, he wants to voice them himself.
Oh, wow, this should be good.
So I thought, right, I'm going to have you little shit. And he came and sat in the voiceover booth, and for a whole hour, I made him read this script over and over again. At the end of each one, I was going, no, that was great. I mean, there was just one line in there that I really felt you could give it, you know, more awe. It just... And normally, with a pro voice, you just record that one line, cut it in. I made him read the whole fucking thing over and over again. At the end of the recording, he came out and went, oh, it's not as easy as you think, is it? I was like, no, it's not.
Did he never question why, if you just had a problem with one line, he was being made to read the whole script?
No, well, I think I'd probably say... Because I was determined that this was going to take an hour. So I was probably saying things like, I mean, I think it's probably better if you run into that line. So it probably is better to go from the start because then it gives you the run-in that you need.
Run into the line.
Oh, it was so, it's such a beautiful moment. It was one of my favorite, because he was such an arsehole.
You see, people actually think that I'm the petty one when they listen to this podcast, but you've got a streak to you as well.
Oh, for him. I mean, it was, because the moment the person who was like in charge of the account came into me and went, he's coming back. I was like, oh, fucking hell. No. Oh, and he wants to voice his own ad. There was a bit like, oh, okay, yeah, bring him in. And I was already planning it in my head. It was going to take an hour. It was wonderful. Anyway, how are you, by the way, Ben? Because last time I spoke to you before recording, you were in the middle of a bit of a crisis.
Oh, I had a trying evening yesterday. Very trying indeed. Basically, I was watching TV and I suddenly hear an alarm going off outside. And I think, what the hell is that? So I go and check it out. And it turns out, I open the front door, it's my burglar alarm going off. But not internally, only the bell externally on the wall.
Oh, I mean, that's a horrible noise as well.
So I start putting in all the numbers, nothing. I eventually get it to shut up, which I realise now, after this event, it had nothing to do with the numbers I was hitting. It was just the bell itself was losing battery. And for some reason, the sadist who created this burglar alarm system decided that when the bell is on low power, what it's going to do to let you know is go off randomly, intermittently, and just drive everybody nuts. This was 8 p.m. on a Sunday night this happened. It was just awful. I had to ring the burglar alarm guy. Then I had to get the neighbour involved.
Well, hang on. What did the burglar alarm guy say? You phoned him. It doesn't sound like... If you had to go to the neighbour second, it doesn't sound like the burglar alarm guy was a lot of help.
The burglar alarm guy basically talked me through it on the phone. And we did a few things. And at that point, he analysed that the problem was nothing that could be controlled with the internal control panel.
Right.
It was the bell losing battery and going off. And the only way to stop that from happening was to turn the battery, unplug the battery on the bell, which is probably, I don't know, 18 feet from the ground.
Right, so it's pretty high.
Yeah. Mrs. Ben suggested... We do have a ladder.
Yeah.
So I went and got the ladder. That probably got me about half the way.
When you say ladder, do you mean steps?
Yeah, it was a step ladder. The bell as well is right outside our bedroom window, but in a way that can't be accessed by leaning out the window, which was really annoying because it's tantalizingly close, but you just can't get to it. And then I had to... tell between my legs, knock on my next door neighbor's house, because he's a real man and he has real tools and real stuff.
Yeah.
So he very kindly came and set up his ladders. And then I couldn't get the panel off.
Was it an idea of unscrewing it or does it lift off?
I needed, check me out, a Phillips head screwdriver, which I had after my wife found it for me. I managed to get the screw out.
Yeah.
But the first problem I had to do was getting the panel off. And I'm up the top of this ladder having to phone the burglar alarm guy back saying, how do you get this panel off? And he says, oh, you just put your fingernails in there and it just pops down really easy.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. I have got I broke three fingernails on it. I've got a really painful...
You're so delicate. I've broken three fingernails.
It's actually more devastating than you know, because I have been trying to stop biting my fingernails as much recently. They've been growing out to a lovely length. I was quite proud of them, and now they just look like a mess. So anyway, I can't do that. I've ruined three fingernails. I ended up going back down the ladder, getting a butter knife from the kitchen, wedging it out that way.
Mrs. Ben must have been so proud.
Eventually... I just give up and I just say, listen, I've got sight of the panel. I don't know what I'm doing. My next door neighbour then very kindly offers to go up the ladder and, you know, disconnect the battery, which he does
When you say very kindly, he's going, if I don't go up, this is going off all fucking night.
Well, and also the problem I had was that I'm not very good with heights. So I'm at the top of this ladder and I'm sort of clinging on for dear life. And I want to sort of shout, you are still down there, aren't you? Holding on. But I'm thinking, this poor bloke, it's 8 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I've pestered him. And also, he's kind of under duress because he knows if he doesn't help me, he's fucked. He's hearing this alarm going off all night.
Yeah.
So he's got no choice in the matter. Anyway, he eventually goes up there. In about 2 seconds, he disconnects the battery, brings it down. Oh, but I was... And now I've, of course, had to book the burglar alarm guy out to come and... replace all the batteries. We had the alarm system installed in about 2016, and then the burglar alarm guy is then telling me that, you know, you should definitely get it looked at once every 2 years, absolutely maximum.
Yeah.
So then I'm getting told off. I just felt so emasculated by the whole experience. I've got the burglar alarm guy bollocking me about my lack of battery checking. I've got my next door neighbour having to be the real man who comes around and basically fixes the whole thing for me. It was just a terrible night.
I mean, the thing is, you're a man who told us last week or a couple of weeks ago that your Ring doorbell, you haven't charged the battery for over a year on that. So the burglar alarm sounds like a step way too far for you.
I did even try and take the front panel off because there was a chance it could be fixed internally. But then I just... And then it just started, it thought someone was trying to break in and dismantle the alarm, so it started going nuts and it started texting me on my phone saying there's someone fiddling with your box. I just gave up at that point.
Wow.
Humiliating.
It sounds humiliating, mate.
It was.
I mean, I'm not laughing too much because you wouldn't get me up a ladder for love nor money. The last time I went up a proper ladder, I fell out the loft, remember?
Oh, yes, I do remember that, yeah.
So I'm not having a go too much.
Well, that was part of the humiliation, really. It was because... I do have a bit of a fear of heights, quite a big fear of heights. And my next door neighbour, who I've got to come and help me, he's holding the ladder. And I thought, well, I can't look like a dick. I can't look, you know, a complete wimp in front of this guy. I've got to try and man it up a bit.
Yeah.
So pride forced me up the ladder. And then when I'm up there, I'm thinking, I can't bring myself to let go of the rungs of the ladder.
Yeah. So and when you're up a ladder, that whole saying, pride comes before a fall, takes on a whole new meaning.
A very literal meaning, yeah. So to him, it must have just looked like I'd climbed the ladder, looked at it,
yeah,
vaguely fiddled with it, and given up, which is kind of the truth.
Yeah, I think that's what I'd do. I'd go, well, I've got up the ladder, what more do you want? I mean, I get shaky if I go up more than three steps on the stepladder. That's about as high as I get. Any more than that, I'm out.
The real kick in the plums as well was when my next door neighbour suggested, you might want to go up just one more rung. Just get a bit closer.
Oh, fuck off.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. But I'm still alive. But, you know, against the odds, I'm still here. Didn't fall off the ladder. I'm still here. But with absolutely no masculinity left. And I realise I'm telling this story the week after I told my bubble bath story.
Yeah.
So any sort of man credibility I have is non-existent at this point.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about it, mate. I just want to check. So your Ring doorbell, you didn't check the batteries. You haven't sorted the batteries out.
Still flat.
Your burglar alarm, the battery. So security is now gone. I just want to check smoke alarm. Have you got a working smoke alarm?
Are you asking me this because you know the answer?
Because if you say no, I know that your dad's going to have a right pop at you. I remember having a pop at you about a year ago when you said you didn't have a working smoke alarm. And I'm putting money on the fact that it's been a year since you've had a working smoke alarm.
The story with the smoke alarm was it used to get very sensitive. Even making so much as toast would set the thing off. And I had a hissy fit one day and smashed it off the wall and threw it outside. Then the next morning, I woke up to... hear it going off. So then I had to go and apologise to the next door neighbour.
Was it the same neighbour?
The same neighbour.
Oh,
and
mate.
Sort of said, I'm really sorry. I've just realised that must have been going off all night. And I bought him a box of chocolates and apologised. And of course, he was as lovely as ever and didn't mind.
Yeah.
And yes, I can confirm I still don't have a smoke alarm.
Because they also let you know the battery's low by going off.
Which, I mean, who decided that's a good thing?
I mean, it scared the shit out of me one night when my smoke alarm went off about 2 o'clock in the morning. And it wakes you up, you think, fuck, the house on fire. And it's, oh no, it's just the battery's flat. But you see, normally it does like a little warning, like little beep. You know, that normally tells me, oh, I need to change the battery. But this time it didn't. It just went full on, I'm going off in the middle of the night.
That's the annoying thing about my burglar alarm. It's got a built-in clock. So it knows what time it is. Why does it pick inconvenient times to go off?
Well, it's not got a conscience like that. It's an inanimate object. It's not thinking, well, I won't warn him that his house is now insecure because it's 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. I'll wait till tomorrow. I don't blame
the physical box itself. I blame the git who programmed it. He has a conscience.
Well, talking of things going off on their own, right?
Yeah.
This scared the living shit out of me the other night, right? So I was woken up at 3:45 the other morning.
Ooh.
By what sounded like a sort of alarm going off, but it wasn't an alarm I recognised. So I went, what the fuck is it? Is it outside? So I got up and opened the bedroom window just to see. Oh, no, so it's not outside. It's in the house.
Oh.
So I came downstairs and this is weird, right? I can't replicate the noise in total, but this was going off continuously. It's my doorbell.
Your doorbell?
My doorbell was going off continuously at 3:45 in the morning, as if someone was just standing there with their finger on the button outside.
Okay.
So I opened the front door. No one there, of course. Doorbell's just going off on its own. Just continuously. Just that noise. And more than that, it's going off at its loudest setting, which I don't normally have it on. And I can't explain it. And I tell you what, it freaked me out because I thought, if there's someone at the door, then this is something quite serious because they're not taking their finger off the button.
Yeah. But no. I mean, no one in an emergency rings the doorbell. They'll be pounding on the door.
Yeah. But then the fact there's no one there, and the last time anyone had touched that doorbell was probably about 8 hours before.
And was the button on the doorbell stuck in the pressed position, or...?
Well, that was a weird thing, because I didn't investigate that at 3:45 in the morning. I just unplugged the doorbell and went back to bed with the adrenaline surging through my body, unable to sleep, with my heartbeat going at maximum. Right? Laying in bed trying to work it out. What the fuck? Like, it's obviously like a technical fault. Like, something has somehow managed to stick the button. But how? Without any external force applied to it, how's that happened? So in the morning, I plugged the thing back in, went out, rang the doorbell. It rang as normal.
Okay.
I did it 3 or 4 times. I once was able to replicate the sticking, and then never again. So there's obviously something not quite right with the bell, but how's it happening on its own 8 hours after anyone has pressed it?
The only guess I can hazard about this is that the doorbell button is sending some sort of frequency signal to the box that makes the ring.
Well, that's what it is, yeah.
So I'm wondering if something locally to you started sending a frequency out that married up with your chime,
yeah,
and started sending it haywire.
Maybe it's some sort of message, like someone sending some sort of message to me.
I remember one lad in my classes at school, whenever we were forced to sit through a video, they'd wheel out this VCR thing and this crappy old TV.
Yeah.
And he had some fancy-ass digital Casio watch. And he had a button on his watch he could press, which would turn the channels off or turn the TV off or turn the volume up or down.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So he'd discreetly sit there tinkering with the TV until the teacher eventually thought there's something wrong with it and gave up and spared us all having to watch the video. So I wonder if it could be something like that. I'm not saying anyone's doing it intentionally.
No.
But I wonder if just locally there's a frequency going out that's caused your doorbell to have a bit of a hissy fit.
Well, I that's what I'm thinking. I don't know what it was, but it scared the living shit out of me. And last night I took the doorbell to bed and plugged it in to the socket nearest my bed, because I thought, if it goes off in the middle of the night again, because it was so loud, I'm thinking, have my neighbours heard? Have I woken my neighbours with this thing? And it scared me shitless. Funny you mentioned about school and telly, though. That's just reminded me of a story of when I was at school. I think we were doing an RE lesson.
Okay.
And our teacher, who I talked to you about before, because he was also our history teacher, the one we used to play all kinds of pranks on, right? It was unhinged. So he said, right, boys, we're going to watch a video today. And that was always good if a teacher says we're going to watch a video. It means you haven't got to do any proper work.
Okay.
So he goes to get he wheels the telly in. And then I think for some reason he leaves the room again to probably go and get the actual video cassette. And in the time that he's gone out, a couple of the boys have pinched the leads that connect the telly to the video machine. Right. So he comes in, and of course he's going, quiet boys, I'm trying to get it working. And he's trying to get this thing working. And he says, oh, I'm going to have to go and get Mrs. Hammond. And Mrs. Hammond was the woman he looked after. Like, she was the technical person. Like, the sort of job that I used to do at the school. If you couldn't get something working, you'd come and get me, right?
Right.
So she was my equivalent. And of course, while he's out getting her, we've set it all up so when she comes in, we're all sitting there quietly watching the video.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He really mugged him off.
He completely mugged him off.
God, that's mean.
He was also the same teacher, of course. We just one day just went, I don't even know how it started, but someone just went, there's a fox. And we just all ran to the window and he's going, sit down, boys, sit down. We go, no, but sir, it's a fox. And and he sort of went along with it. He came to look out the window. There wasn't a fox.
But was this just something spontaneous or did you all...
No, spontaneous, completely spontaneous.
Wow, children are bastards, aren't they? I'd love to get the perspective of a teacher on this podcast just to hear some of the more, you know, what sort of modern day equivalents are now, what the kids are doing in class to disrupt and distract. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the same sorts of things, though. I mean, there's probably more technology involved now, but it's probably this. Kids will always do similar pranks.
Well, one thing I thought of was that we never really had, I just about survived it when I was going through school. We never really had the pressures of social media or things like, you know, TikTok or...
No.
But that must be so disruptive at the moment.
Oh, completely. And I mean, I know that certainly from when I worked at a school, particularly when kids get to, and I worked in a primary school, so particularly when kids get to year six and they've done their SATs and they've kind of got those few months where they're waiting to go to secondary school, but the pressure's off. So life just eases up for them a little bit. At that point, they tend to go a little bit feral.
Yes.
And I know that there were times when some of the messages they were sending to each other and in their little groups about certain people, and I know teachers had to go and deal with what was being said, because I'm not even going to tell you some of the things that were being said. They were just absolutely disgusting. Pure filth. Like, how they've even got that language is beyond me at that age.
What age are we talking?
Well, year six, so that's...
Oh, wow.
11, 10, 11.
Oh, wow, that's got to be stuff they've heard online then, hasn't it?
It's got to be, like, older siblings, perhaps they've picked it up from, but that, I think, tends to be the more problematic age, but I'm sure even younger now, you know, kids learn to use this technology, but how much problems that causes the teachers on a day-to-day basis... I don't know. I suspect in secondary schools more so.
Yeah, I'd love to get an account of that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I know a couple of teachers, so perhaps one day we'll see if we can get one of them on.
Oh, and, yeah, dude, they can be completely anonymous if you want. That would be great.
Yeah, all right. We'll see if we can sort it out. Well, it's been an exciting old week, isn't it, Ben, with in space terms?
Oh, has it? I knew that something happened, some sort of module landing somewhere or something.
Perseverance has landed on Mars.
That's a very American name. I bet it was an American thing.
Of course it was NASA. It was a NASA thing. Although Mars has become like, there was another probe that's orbiting Mars now that's been launched by the United Arab Emirates. I think... Is it China have got a probe going to Mars as well? So Mars has become quite a focal point for all kinds of space agencies at the moment. But NASA have put this rover down on the surface.
I'm going to ask a fairly geeky question, and I don't really expect you to know the answer.
It's very unlikely I know the answer.
My question is, when you've got a lunar module thing or a rover or whatever landing on Mars, yeah, being as far away as Mars is,
yeah,
when you ask it to send you information,
yeah,
how instantaneous is the response, bearing in mind how far away it is?
Well, it takes some time. I can't give you an exact time, but obviously depends on the signal you're sending. If it's a picture, obviously that travels at the speed of light, so you have to know the speed of light and then work out the distance to know the time it would take for that image to reach.
So there would
you.
Be a considerable delay between asking it for feedback and getting the feedback.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I think that's fair to say. But it landed successfully. I mean, it is amazing now, the fact that they can have this technology. I mean, they've even got a picture of it making its approach. It's just incredible. This thing.
It's all very impressive. But what is it that they're hoping to learn with this particular rover?
Well, this one is so exciting. I mean, if you're into space, and I think we should all be into this, because this could change, like, this could be the most important probe that's been sent to Mars, potentially to space even, because what they are trying to do is find evidence of life that once may have been on Mars.
Oh, okay. I thought we'd already discovered water on Mars, hadn't we?
I don't know if there's water. Yeah, well, there might be water, but there certainly was water. We knew that. But this is whether life ever existed on Mars is the thing they're searching for.
Okay.
So they're going to drill into the rock. Where they've landed is obviously an area of interest. So they're going to drill into the surface, collect samples. The thing about space stuff is, though, you have to be so patient, because this thing is just going to collect the samples and just ready them for collection by something else that we may not be able to get for another 10 years.
Jesus, that is a level of patience that I just don't possess.
But if they, I mean, just imagine the implications if they find proof that there once was life on Mars.
This is all getting very deep all of a sudden.
It's very exciting, though, isn't it? It's very exciting.
It's interesting.
You're right, though. It's the patience side of me that thinks, oh, 10 years. I mean, they've got to sort of come up with they've got a theory as to how they're going to collect these samples.
Right, I don't mean to criticise the boys at NASA.
Oh, here we go. Go on, Ben.
Why not just develop the technology to a place before you send it up there that it can come back? Just seems like shoddy workmanship.
Oh, really? I mean, this is extraordinary for a man who won't go up a ladder to have a go at NASA.
Yeah, that's fair.
I was talking to Gareth Sturdy, who's been on the podcast. We were sending the odd message the other day and just saying how excited we both were about this. And I said, you know, this could be the most important discovery of our lifetimes. You know, even in 10 years' time, assuming that I'm still around, this could be...
God, aim high, Triff. Fuck me, 10 years?
Well, you know, I'm getting old now, mate. And
you're in your early 40s, man. I'm hoping you've got at least 10 more years.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? But, but, you know, this could be monumental. Just incredible. When you think back in history, when people dreamt of going to space, I was reading this thing this week. I absolutely love this, right? You've heard of Oliver Cromwell, right?
I have heard of Oliver Cromwell, yeah.
Right. Well, his brother-in-law, his name was John Wilkins, and he was a distinguished sort of scholar. He was also a clergyman, but he was a founding member of the Royal Society, which is the world's oldest national scientific society, right? And he had this fantastical idea. And just imagine what he would think now if he could see that we had Perseverance going up to Mars. So he believed that the moon and the surrounding planets were all inhabited and was convinced that he could build a flying machine to reach them.
Okay.
So bearing in mind, this is, you know, back in the 1650s. And because he thought people lived there, he had this whole idea that we were going to trade with the aliens.
Okay.
So he had this idea that we were going to travel up. We were going to be taken up by angels, by the way. Who were going to take us on these chariots and,
okay,
and take us up to space. And then we would... it'd be all right. We'd be able to breathe up there as well. He believed that we would grow accustomed to the...
Oh, the angels will sort that out.
The purer air that was breathed by the angels. He believed that we'd be able to do that. And then we'd be able to trade with the aliens.
What would we be trading?
Well, he didn't know what they had, but he just thought it would be a way to contribute to the prosperity of the country if we could trade with the residents of the moon and other planets. So presumably if he thought there was life up there, that they would have goods or materials that we might like, and vice versa.
Okay. Well, I don't feel it's that fair to take the piss out of him too hard, considering this was, what, 1650-something, you said?
Yeah, yeah. What annoys me...
There are people still alive in 2021 who believe the Earth is flat, so I think he's head and shoulders above those idiots.
Look, I'm not having a pop at him. I'm just saying, look at what he would... look at what he think now, though. You know, just incredible. But the only thing that does annoy me is...
Well, no, you're wrong. Sorry, you're wrong. Surely, if he was to look at the situation now... that's a massive downside from what he was hoping for. He was hoping for angels to take us onto the moon to trade with aliens. Your little fucking glorified remote control car plodding around Mars.
Glorified remote control car.
That would be such a disappointment.
Yeah, you're right. He was a fucking fruitcake, wasn't he? Yeah,
really. And he wouldn't be. He wouldn't have his mind blown at all. He'd think, well, hang on, what about the angels and the trading? You're just pushing a remote control car around Mars, and then,
can't even come back. Will you stop saying remote control car? You're making it sound like it's a scale extra set we put up there. It's way more complicated than that.
Piece of shit can't even come back on its own.
You're out of order. I tell you what annoys me though. This is something that worries me now, is the fact that he wanted to turn space into like a business opportunity. We can't be doing that. I've said this before. You know, we explore. Yes, let's go and learn, but let's not. You know, let's not make things. When they talk about mining the moon, let's leave the moon alone.
You say this, but again, I think you're wrong. I think you're a bit of a hypocrite, because I know that you're very anti-capitalism when it comes to the moon and buying bits of the moon and whatnot.
Yeah.
However, you also don't like littering. I know you're quite strong about.
Yeah.
Yet, is anyone going to scoop this remote control car back off of Mars and bring it home? Or is that just going to be there? Are we just cluttering up Mars now?
Well, no, I agree with you there. We do have to find a way of clearing up the clutter we've left in space. I think what we're leaving on planets is... It's nothing compared with the stuff, the debris we're just leaving floating around in orbit.
Hang on a minute, though. You're so short-term memory. It's abysmal. Like last week's podcast, you were hoping that you yourself could be left floating around the atmosphere.
No, but I would come
back. Ashes to be spread along the cosmic
winds. But I would fall back down to Earth eventually and become part of the Earth again. You know, I'd come, as I say, I'd fall as rain or snow. I think I said that last week. I'm not going to be just floating around. I'm not going into orbit.
Well,
it doesn't go that high up.
Still making a mess.
I mean, you're right, though. I do think we've got to be very mindful of what we're putting up there, which is why when they put, I think it was Cassini, the probe that went out to investigate the rings of Saturn, they were very careful in the end to make sure it burned up in the atmosphere rather than... Because I think I've got this right, that one of the moons... of Saturn could be a place where life could exist, and they were very worried that this craft would crash land on this moon, so they changed its course to make sure it burnt up in the atmosphere of Saturn.
Okay, and that will have what dissolved it entirely,
completely, just absolutely destroyed it, nothing left.
Fair enough.
That's what we need to ensure that we do when things are finished with that. That we somehow, let's just say, I mean, Perseverance is going to be doing its work for a long time on Mars. We've already got Curiosity already on Mars. It's been working for years. But when they're done, we need to find a way of not just leaving it there. You're absolutely right on that.
Or you could fit it with some sort of self-destruct button, which completely obliterates it.
Yeah, well, you'd need it to come probably back up into the atmosphere and then fall back through to burn up. Like, if you're going to create it, something that makes it self-destruct, that's going to be very difficult to make sure it self-destructs and there's nothing left in there. You know, that's going to be very hard to do.
That's why they pay the boys at NASA the big bucks, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you've got to find something that will find those sorts of temperatures. You're talking thousands of degrees, aren't you? To totally.
This is people who sent a bloody remote control car to Mars. They can work that out. Rockets.
I'm not saying that they can't work it out. I'm just saying it's a lot to take on. That's a massive task you're asking there, and I think it's the right thing to do if we can find a way. And I'm sure they're probably working on that.
I wasn't actually saying this because I care. I was just pointing out your hypocrisy. That's all.
I don't know why I was being. I don't see why I was being hypocritical.
I think you're just very wishy-washy about. You know, you don't like littering, but you don't mind sending shit up to space and. Yeah, you're just all over the shop, really, morally.
No, I don't think I am. I think let's go and explore. Let's go and find out life, the universe. But what I'm saying is let's not, you know, because all it is it's going to be rich people. There's going to be people that don't give a shit who start selling bits off, mining the moon, mining other planets. We can't be doing that. You know, we've worked with people who would sell their own grandmothers.
Oh, yes.
Imagine that they're the sort of people that would suddenly be in charge. And they'd go, well, I've been a moon, sell it. Just sell it.
I'd actually like to know, this is a strange one. Who owns the moon?
No, what do you mean who owns the moon? No one owns the moon.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but people can buy acres of land on the moon, yeah?
Yeah, but I mean, that's just bullshit. That's just a money-making thing. Like, you don't actually own that bit of moon. I mean, I suppose maybe a certain...
It's like me telling you, would you like to buy my next-door neighbour's garden?
Yeah.
I'm selling you something that I don't own. So what gives me the right to sell it?
Well, basically, yeah, it's all bullshit, all of that. I mean, look, I've bought people bits of the moon. I bought my godson, I think, a piece of the moon once. I thought it was a lovely... But, you know, I suspect some lawyer would argue if he went and claimed it, he'd probably have a claim. He's got a certificate that says he owns a bit of the moon. But the chances of him going and claiming it, I suppose, are so slim that these companies can sell something. You can buy a star, can't you? You know, it's like,
yes, yeah.
How many times are they selling that star? Are they just selling it once? I don't know how it works. Perhaps they are. Perhaps I'm being very unfair to these companies, but it strikes me as a little bit of a money-making thing.
But it's just very strange to me that you're allowed to sell acreage on the moon. I suppose, to be fair, if anyone owns the moon, it's the Americans.
What, because they got there first?
Yeah, on a sort of finders keepers kind of deal.
Yeah.
I don't know if finders keepers stands up in court, by the way.
But yeah, certainly when you're talking about, you know, a heavenly body, that would be... I'd love to see that court case. It would be a very interesting court case. I'd certainly watch that on the telly.
Why is it you refer to them as heavenly bodies, by the way?
It's just a phrase, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else would you call it?
A planet?
Astronomical... Well, the moon's not a planet. It's a satellite. So, yeah. Heaven, I don't know.
I just don't like the phrase heavenly body.
Is it because it gives it some sort of... Are we talking about this man and his angels again? You don't like the fact that I'm talking about the heavens. It brings some sort of...
Yeah, it's giving it some sort of religious aspect to it that I don't particularly like.
Okay. okay. Well, what would you prefer me to call space... things.
So I'm surprised the moon is classed as a... What did you say? It wasn't a...
It's a satellite. Yes.
I sort of think of it as a kind of dwarf planet or something, but...
No, it's not a planet by any means. I'm not entirely...
You can tell, really, that I might have benefited if that lad in my class hadn't been turning off the videos with his watch. I might learn something.
We say perhaps you should have listened more at school, but I'd like to think, Ben, that you've got, you know, you're talking about academic intelligence that school tries to teach you, but it's all nonsense, really.
A lot of it is, yeah.
You know, you've got a very logical brain, the way you think things through, which is why I know you like a good riddle.
I do like a good riddle, and I do think I have a knack for trying to see loopholes in things and trying to abuse them.
And you're very inquisitive. I know you told me before that you used to get really pissed off with you at school because you'd not really got out of that two-year-old thing of going, why? Why?
Yeah,
why?
Pretty much.
So I want to just... I came across a riddle this week that I want us to have a go at solving.
Okay. I think I'm pretty good at riddles.
I just want to warn you now that it's never been solved.
Okay.
So it might be difficult. But I thought what we'd do is we'd warm up with a few riddles that I do have answers to, just to get us our minds into the right headspace.
I would suggest that... pitching someone a riddle that has never been solved, even by the greatest academics on earth, to someone who has just learnt that the moon isn't a planet, you're probably not onto a winner.
Well, let's give it a go.
Okay, let's do it.
Because you, as I say, you've got a different way of thinking. You might crack it.
Let's do it.
Okay, well, let's get into the right headspace. So let's just go through a few here. So you ready?
I'm ready.
You measure my life in hours, and I serve you by expiring. I'm quick when I'm thin and slow when I'm fat. The wind is my enemy. What am I?
Oh.
Now, I don't know the answer to this yet. I haven't clicked on the answer to this yet. I thought we'd have a go. This reminds us of, like, the old gaffer on our radio days, those sort of questions the gaffer would set us.
Yeah. Can I have it again, please?
You measure my life in hours, and I serve you by expiring. I'm quick when I'm thin and slow when I'm fat. The wind is my enemy.
Okay, the thick and thin bit doesn't really fit my first thoughts, but I am thinking a candle.
Ooh, I think that's a very good answer, because it does make sense, because I'm quick when I'm thin. So when it's when your candle's thin, it runs, burns quicker, burns out quicker, and slower to burn when it's fatter, wax-wise.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a candle. I think you might be right. Do you want me to check on the answer?
Yes, please.
The answer is a candle.
There you go.
You see, I knew you'd be good at this.
Yes.
Right, let's do another one. I have cities, but no houses. I have mountains, but no trees. I have water, but no fish. What am I?
I think I know it.
You know it already?
I think so.
Okay.
What I think it's a map.
Oh, again, very good. You see, this is where you're very good at these. You want me to check the answer?
If you agree, unless you want to give it a bit more thinking time.
No, I'm with you. I think you're right.
Check it.
The answer is a map.
You see, I'm not even a pretty face.
All right, let's try another one then. What is seen in the middle of March and April that can't be seen at the beginning or end of either month?
R, the letter R.
I'm with you on that. I think that's a bit of a shit one.
Well, don't look at me. I didn't come up with that one. I just solved it, I think.
All right, let's do one more and then we'll get
was
to
that
this.
Right?
So it is right. It is right. Right, here you go for your full house.
Okay.
You see a boat filled with people. It has not sunk, but when you look again, you don't see a single person on the boat. Why?
I don't know. They got off? It's docked. Have they got off?
You see a boat filled with people. It hasn't sunk, but when you look again, you don't see a single person. Is it because it's filled with people, so you don't see a single person on the boat?
Oh, you've gone with the old language.
Yeah.
Twist. I was thinking of having been on a cruise or two in my time, I was thinking, well, they've simply disembarked.
They've gone off for their 4 hours of tourism.
they're currently strolling around the Rock of Gibraltar. No, I think that's right. I think I like your answer better than mine. I think, yes, you wouldn't see a single person because it's full. So,
let's
have
a look. Oh, I tell you what, I was sort of on the right lines, but it's not the right answer.
Really?
Let me see if you
can get it.
Give
me the question again.
Yeah, let me see if you can get it. You see a boat filled with people. It hasn't sunk, but when you look again, you don't see a single person on the boat. Why? I was right to think along the lines of the wording, if that helps you.
Is it going to be something as dumb as everyone on board the boat was part of a couple, so none of them were single, so you don't see a single person?
Yeah, all the people were married.
It's fucking stupid, that. I mean, I'm glad I got it, but still. Dumb as shit.
Right, well, I think we've done a few there to get us in the right frame of mind, okay? So I'm going to go to this. This is a riddle that hasn't been solved for many years.
Do you know when it was devised?
Well, it was devised about 150 years ago.
And unsolved to this day?
Unsolved to this day. It was a brain teaser that was discovered amongst the papers of a man called Samuel Wilberforce, who was somehow related to William Wilberforce. He was a Church of England bishop. His nickname, I don't like this. I don't like this as a nickname, particularly for a bishop.
Go on.
Soapy Sam.
Ooh. Yeah, he sounds like the local wrong'un, doesn't he?
Apparently it was just because the way he used to hold his hands when he was talking, it looked like he was sort of washing his hands. I think there's more to that nickname than meets the eye. A bishop called Soapy Sam.
Okay.
But anyway,
that's the riddle
for another day. So he set this riddle, and to this day, no one's ever figured out what the answer is. But I reckon we could give this a damn good go.
Well, I think we've established our credentials. We are half decent at riddles.
Okay, you ready? Here we go.
Ready.
I'm the sweetest of sounds in orchestra heard, yet in orchestra never was seen. I'm a bird of gay plumage, yet less like a bird, nothing ever in nature was seen. Touch the earth, I expire, in water I die. In air I lose my breath, yet can swim and can fly. Darkness destroys me and light is my death, and I only keep going by holding my breath. If my name can't be guessed by a boy or a man, by a woman or girl, it certainly can. So that's the wording. I've sent it to you so you can look at it, because it's one of those that you're not going to remember.
It's very wordy.
So let's go through it bit by bit. So I'm the sweetest of sounds in orchestra heard, yet in orchestra never was seen. So my first thought was like, is it like a musical note? Do you know what I mean? So it's the sweetest thing from an orchestra, but you don't see it.
Yes.
But then it doesn't fit like the next bit. I'm a bird of gay plumage, yet less like a bird, nothing ever in nature was seen. So it doesn't, like, musical notes already out the window, isn't it, really?
Yes. I almost want this whole riddle to be sort of rewritten in, but mind you, maybe the wording's crucial. I'm a bit worried that, what was it, Soapy Sam?
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried he might be Soapy Sam the Piss Taker, who sets riddles that just don't have an answer. Did he ever, like, disclose the answer? Is it sealed in a vault somewhere?
No one knows. Maybe, because this was found amongst his papers, maybe somewhere amongst his papers there's an answer. No one knows.
Touch the earth, I expire.
Yeah.
In water, I die. In air, I lose breath. Yet can't swim or fly.
Yet can swim and
fly.
Oh,
yet can swim and fly. Okay.
So one thing that someone's thought was, which I thought was a great idea, but it doesn't fit anything else. One person put the idea of it being a shuttlecock. It's got some feathers on it. It's got its plumage.
Yes.
But
fits none of the other bits of the
riddle. Exactly. None of it fits. So I've got a few things I've written down.
Oh, you've come up with some guesses, have you?
Well, just to throw them out there.
Okay, the final line, of course, if my name can't be guessed by a boy or a man, by a woman or girl, it certainly can.
Yeah, so it led me to think, which hasn't helped me, by the way, in my deliberations of this, was, is this something more, bearing in mind the time this was written, something that would be seen as more womanly?
Yes. I wonder if that puts us at an immediate disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought perhaps if we can't come back, the chances of us finding an answer today on this podcast, very unlikely considering it's not been answered for 148 years. I thought we could come up with some ideas, put it out there as well. I want people to get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts on it at Trev and Ben on Twitter. But then you could ask Mrs. Ben.
Yeah.
In the time between now and next week's podcast and see whether her womanly wiles would help with an answer.
I'll give it a try.
I mean, but although we've already found out that you're more of a woman than she is, so maybe maybe you'll get this like a shot.
She might, or as the riddle suggests, I would say I'd go on holding my breath. I think the answer to this isn't going to be one physical item. I think it's going to be a conceptual answer.
What,
I've got nothing to add to that statement, but
like God, considering he was like a clergyman.
Yeah, there's a clue.
So
it's going to be, if it's something religious, the chances of me getting it are slim to none.
So I mean, when you think about it, the sweetest sounds an orchestra heard, yet an orchestra never seen. It could be like the voices of angels, couldn't it?
Yes.
I'm a bird of gay plumage, yet less like a bird. Nothing ever in nature was seen. I mean, the fact that this is gay plumage means it should be kind of bright feathers.
Yes.
But the only
yes.
thing I'm thinking is a dove, you know, like the dove of peace in biblical terms. So by gay plumage, could it mean just bright white feathers? I don't know.
Yes, it could.
But then touch the earth, I expire. In water, I die. In air, I lose breath. I mean, my whole theory on it being God goes there. I mean, theologically, I'm sure anyone might, you know, my knowledge ends there. So
there's a part of me that thinks the answer might be hope.
Hope?
Yeah.
Okay. Explain.
I think, for example, an orchestra could play music which could evoke feelings of hopefulness.
Okay, but you can't see it.
You can't see it. Hope is a bright, hopeful emotion, obviously. Hopeful emotion. It's a bright, makes you feel good, hope. So it's a bird of gay plumage. It's big and it's bright.
Right.
Yet nothing in nature was ever seen. The next line kind of falls down a bit. Touch the earth, I expire. In water, I die.
I suppose if you've plummeted to the ground at high speed, hope certainly ends the moment you touch the earth.
Yes, in water you'll drown, so hope is lost.
Yeah.
In air, I lose breath.
I don't know what that, how you'd explain hope in that.
Yet can swim and fly, hope can be passed along.
Right.
I'm grasping at straws here.
Yeah,
Darkness destroys me and light is my death. Okay. I suppose seeing and realising the...
I mean, you've lost it now, haven't you? To start like for sentence one and two, I'm with you. Sentence three, I've started to doubt you. Now you've lost me.
Darkness is the absence of hope because there's nothing in it.
Okay, yeah.
Shining a light on something proves it isn't there, which could destroy hope.
Right,
you can see that the thing you were hoping for isn't there.
All hope right, I'm back on board.
Good. I'm turning this around. And I only keep going by holding my breath.
If you hope for something, you hold your breath in hope.
You metaphorically hold your breath if you're hoping for something.
Okay, yeah.
If my name can't be guessed by a boy or a man, by a woman or girl, it certainly can. Hope can be a girl's name.
Right.
I think there's a bit of crowbarring going on.
A bit? Oh, don't. Don't do yourself down.
What's really going to piss me off? This is why I didn't want to watch Dad's Army and why I will never watch Dad's Army, because there's no fucking answer to it. There's missing episodes and I don't like this shit. I want to know what the answer is.
Well, here's a couple of other thoughts I had.
Go on.
Flying fish.
See, I tried to string together quite a beautiful analogy of hope as being the answer, but you've gone to flying fish.
A vampire.
So so please, before we move on, we don't just skip over flying fish.
I think I was clutching straws at duck when I wrote that down.
A duck?
Well, I thought,
how do any of these fit any of the lines?
Well,
let's apply line one. I'm the sweetest of sounds in orchestra heard, yet in orchestra was never seen, flying fish.
Well, as they move through the air, they probably make a lovely noise as the sort of a flapping noise they make, don't they, as they move through the air. That could be quite a beautiful noise.
Have you ever heard an orchestra play the sound of a flying fish?
Well, no, but well, probably orchestrally you might hear it. I mean, think about the Carnival of the Animals. Is there a flying fish section in that? I don't know.
Okay, moving on. Let's apply line two to vampires, shall we? I'm a bird of gay plumage, yet less like a bird.
Yet less like a bird, right? So yes. Bat. So it's... right? But it's a vampiric bat. Nothing ever in nature was seen. So, bearing in mind...
Yes, you realise, though, it falls down on the first line, I'm a bird of gay plumage. Vampires are famously discreet and not what you would describe as a bird of gay plumage.
Well, they're not a bird, either. I mean, but, I think you're picking holes.
Okay, so we'll move on to duck, and I'll pick line four. Darkness destroys me and light is my death. I only keep going by holding my breath.
Yeah, well, when a duck dives underwater, obviously, if they stay too long under it, then they run out of breath. So they have to hold their breath. So they only keep going by holding their breath.
Darkness destroys me. Do all ducks die at night time?
Well, no, but if they're underwater for too long, all goes dark. They drown. Okay. So everything goes dark.
And a light is my death for a duck.
When they are... all right, well, that bit...
You've got nothing, have you? You've got absolutely nothing.
What else did I write down? I wrote down rainbow, but I didn't really know where I was going with that.
No, see, I like that, because I think at that point you've started to venture into the conceptual idea, which is, I don't think the answer is going to be to this 150-year-old riddle that no one's ever solved, duck. I think it's going to be a little bit more thought out than that.
Well, I had to look online to see what other people had come up with. I tell you that the most likely answer that I think someone's come up with, that I think you could kind of have a look at, is the mythical siren.
Hmm.
So, okay. It's the siren.
No, that's wrong.
Why is it wrong?
In water I die.
Yeah, they lived in water, didn't they?
They did.
But did they live under the water?
Trev, the wording is "in water I die." Sirens, famously mermaids, they can fucking swim, mate.
Well, no, is a siren rubbish. The same as a mermaid? I don't know if a siren
song used to draw sailors to the jagged rocks and they'd crash their ships.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were basically mermaids, weren't they?
Are you sure they're mermaids? Is a siren different to a mermaid? Would a siren live on the rocks? So it couldn't actually be in the water.
Yeah, do you think any of our two listeners are mermaid experts we could ask? Or
I don't know, I've seen Splash, if that helps. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. I don't really know what we talked about today. It's all a bit of a blur, this podcast.
It has been, but I don't give a shit if it's not really themed or anything. I just think it's kind of a weird podcast in that it just kind of goes everywhere, and I don't think it's dull. I think it fills an hour, doesn't it?
That's what we're here for.
Just what people need in lockdown.
Pass a bit of time before we all die.
Yay!
So thanks very much for listening. Couple of recommendations before we go. I'm listening to a great podcast at the moment on the BBC Sounds app, although I think it's available anywhere else you get your podcasts. As you know, I'm going through a bit of a phase of reading about poltergeists. I'm obviously reading the book about the Thornton Heath poltergeist.
May I say you're taking your sweet time with that book?
I'm getting towards the end now.
Okay.
And I don't want to spoil anything in case people want to read this book. But so far, I don't think there's much to be frightened of. That's all I can say of the investigation so far. But the podcast is called The Battersea Poltergeist, which is a case from the 1950s, which is very similar goings-on to the Thornton Heath poltergeist. Levitations and things appearing and being thrown and all those sorts of things. And it's a fascinating story. They talk to the... She's now 80, but the girl who was the sort of target for a lot of the poltergeist actions. But I'll tell you the best bit of the podcast so far was when this girl was going through all this, they brought in an exorcist when she was about 16 or something. So the presenter of the podcast wants to find out exactly what happens in exorcism. So he speaks to an exorcist.
Right.
But there's this great moment where he says, oh, I was at this one exorcism once, and I saw this man's leg just burst into flames. And then he says, I lost concentration for just a second. And I thought, I don't want an exorcist losing concentration.
If
the outcome of that is my leg going on fire, keep your eye on the fucking ball, mate. Come on. But it's a fascinating listen, so I really recommend that. The Battersea Poltergeist, it's called.
Oh, that sounds good. I don't have any fresh recommendations, but I would like to reinforce one that you gave a little while ago, which was Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel.
Oh, yes.
I binged all four episodes of it last night after I fixed the burglar alarm. / ripped it off the wall. And it is fantastic. I think we talked about it on the phone, and I would have a slight criticism that I feel, as you said to me, I'm in full agreement, it probably could have been told in 3 hours rather than four.
Yeah, the last episode I felt dragged immensely.
Yeah. Very good, though, nonetheless. Very entertaining. And this, a small criticism of it, I feel like it lacked a bit of empathy. I think it sort of forgot... It got too involved with the story of it all and kind of forgot the fact that it was an actual human person at the centre of it all. And also, the what we'll call the internet sleuths who were involved, I feel like some of them took it a little bit far.
I didn't like them. I think if you're going to watch it, you might want to tune out now. So we don't spoil anything for you. So thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week. Right. If you're still listening, you either watched it or you don't give a shit. I hated them. And my problem with it was that... don't fuck with cats that has the internet sleuths.
Yes.
That went to solve the crime. They were oddballs. There's no doubt about it. I think in this case, they were all... They were too much of conspiracy theorists, and a bit wrapped up in their own world, and not actually. And they became like gruesome tourists. They go to the hotel, so it became about them, and as you say, not about her. And I think I didn't like them, and they were making me angry towards the end.
There was one man who was one of the internet sleuths, and I think internet sleuthing, to an extent, is actually a positive thing, and is it can be very helpful. However, this guy towards the end, and I think if you watch the documentary, you'll know who I'm talking about. He had a weird sort of aura he gave off where he felt like he was personally owed an explanation. Like, yeah. Like he was just as much a part of the incident as the people who were involved in the incident. And that just felt a little bit, just a step too far, intrusive and strange, to be honest.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the documentary, but I found, as I say, I just found that they were pretty, like in Don't Fuck With Cats, I kind of, the two main internet sleuths, I sort of warmed to, even though they were oddballs. But in this document, I didn't warm to one of them. And I just thought, you're making assumptions based on not a lot. And
some of the accusations were complete tinfoil hat brigade.
Exactly. Yeah, and they were all feeding.
Well, we are in the spoiler zone of this podcast now, but they pretty much ruined a musician's life.
Yes,
with incorrect accusations, assumptions, and don't get me wrong, this guy turns out to your average Joe to be a little bit, you know, odd, but it was nothing to do with this woman's disappearance at all. Mind you, I can see how this whole mystery did attract some of these slightly stranger people, because there were, hands up, there were some extremely weird coincidences going on.
Yes, there were. But I think when it's all explained at the end, you just think, actually, it was everything. I was very happy with the explanation that was given, the medical circumstances of the poor victim. And as you say, I think these people, as you said, they destroyed this musician's life. And as he said at the end, he said, I've not received one apology from anyone.
No.
And, you know, there were people sending a message going, come on, you killed her.
When I finished watching it, slightly heavy-heartedly, I turned to Mrs. Benn and said to her, you know what, the saddest thing is that this story has been pretty conclusively, for a logically minded person, this has been wrapped up now. It's all very sad, but it puts to bed the story.
Yeah.
And I said, that's still not going to be enough. Some of these sleuths are just going to persist with the idea that there's something going on here, some big conspiracy, yeah, and they're going to drive themselves nuts, going round and round looking for things that aren't there.
This is the problem, I think, with conspiracy theorists a lot of the time, is your answers are there in front of you, you're just not happy with the answers, so you're never going to be satisfied.
Yeah, and I think the sad thing is it's almost like they want to believe something more exciting or interesting or grisly happened,
yeah,
than the actual reality of the very, very sad truth.
And the you know, again, you know, I don't want to get onto the, I sort of get on the bandwagon of having a go at them. They're living their lives and that's fine, but I think it gives their life some sort of meaning to be involved in this story, and so they don't want to let it go. I think that's part of it as well. It's like, if you accept the explanation, you've lost that thing that's kept you going for however many years, you know?
Oh yeah, and it won't just be, imagine for example if CCTV footage emerged from some hidden building, you know, the next building along, which proved the police were absolutely right. They wouldn't all say, oh, I was wrong, and put it to bed. That would just spark off another deep dive analysis into this latest footage, and it's not going to be enough for these people. And also, they've invested so much time, they can't possibly think, I've wasted so much of my life going down rabbit holes for no reason.
Yeah, there you go, that's it. But it's a fascinating watch nonetheless, isn't
it? It's brilliant.
Really good. So there we are. That is it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe and all that sort of stuff. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.